I am Boutros, Boutros Ghali. Put down your gun and listen to...
Are You Aware? Music that has something to say on CITR 101.9 Vancouver.
I belong to no one like the watermelon, rolling with momentum, spitting out its seeds, buried under snow and waiting just to show us how it goes and knows how yummy it will be. I belong to no one, a song without an album, long forgotten maxim spoken to the sea. I belong with no one, I belong with no one, I belong with no one, you belong with me. When I was a boy, I wished that I was older, wished that I was taller, tall enough to see the things I see today. Now I wish they'd go away, how they led me far astray, stray from what I need a little.
Welcome, welcome to another version of Are You Aware? Music that has something to say on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver. Well, I hope you all had a beautiful long weekend. The weather didn't cooperate too well, but at least we got some sunshine in. Well, I'm very excited for today's show. We've got a chock-a-fock, a chock-a-block full hour and a half of wonderfulness starting very soon. We have Inner City Farms coming in about 25 minutes to talk to me about what they do around Vancouver. I'll just give you the little bit of information about Inner City Farms. What they do is they take residential areas and turn them into thriving farms, all in an effort to get people more involved with their food and where it comes from and how it can be grown in an ethical and organic manner. So I'm very excited to have the guys from inner city farms here in, like I said, in about 25 minutes, and they'll tell you all about what they do and where they're going. So that's very exciting. But up before that, I have a hell of a lot of great music to get through, including what we just heard, and I'm very excited about this new album. I can't wait to hear it in its full entirety. That was Bourne Ruffians with their song Birthmarks from their album Birthmark and their song Needle. Now that song, I listened to the album once through, and it's a very eclectic sounding album. It's very Bourne Ruffians. There's no disputing the voice. You can definitely recognize it. But I found, especially with that song, it really reminded me a lot with the harmonies of the Fleet Foxes. But not all of the songs are like that. They're very different. Some are rocky, some are slow. And you know what? I think it's a darn good album. If you don't know who the Bourne Ruffians are, they've actually been around since 2004, and they formed in Toronto. And Birthmarks is actually their third album, and it was released last month on last month. I'm like, where are we? No, June isn't here just yet. And they've been involved with a bunch of stuff, including they did a benefit concert in 2010 where if you brought in a non-perishable item for the Guelph Food Bank, you only had to pay $10 to get in. Otherwise, it was $12. And I thought that was a fantastic initiative to try and get people to not only get involved with music, but donate as well. So if you're a first-time listener to Are You Aware, I'll give you a little bit of an idea of the method behind my madness. I choose music that has the root of positive action over apathy involved with it. And what I mean by that, either the musician has been doing some philanthropic work that I want to tell you about, or the song has a positive social justice message. This is all in an effort to get you, the listener, to be inspired to go out and do something positive for your community, whether it be locally or globally. And I love music, and I love finding out what musicians are involved in. And I just try and tell you what the musicians are involved in, because maybe you want to be involved in the same thing they're doing, or it inspires you to follow your heart and be involved in any way you can. So what a perfect example to have Inner City Farms in here today telling us how they have taken the route of positive action over apathy. But without further ado, let's get some more music happening. We have Passion Pit ready for you, and this album has been released a couple of months, or probably about 6 to 8 months ago. It was in July. They're an electro pop band from Cambridge, Massachusetts, and they formed in 2007. Gossamer, which is what you're going to hear from, actually was released last July in 2012. And in 2010, Passion Pit actually headlined the Campus Consciousness Tour, which was a two-week tour featuring stops at 12 colleges. In addition to the music, they focused on promoting eco-friendly lifestyles. It was organized by Reverb, which is a non-profit environmental organization that educates and engages musicians and their fans to promote environmental sustainability. Now, Reverb actually has some greening services for bands, which is pretty cool. They include carbon neutral concerts and venues, biodiesels for vehicles and generators, as well as waste reduction and biodegradable catering products, as well as recycling and green bus supplies and cleaners, which is pretty cool. Reverb has worked with such artists including the Beastie Boys, Dave Matthews, Jack Johnson, John Mayer, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Norah Jones. So I love how they're integrating environmental sustainability within the music industry, because when you think about it, putting on a concert or a festival is quite a wasteful endeavor. It is awesome, and I'm not saying that festivals should never happen. And to anyone who's going to Sasquatch this weekend for the big festival coming up on Friday, I am super jealous. I hope you have a fabulous time. It's going to be amazing. That's down at the Gorge in Washington. But without further ado, let's hear Passion Pit, Take a Walk. You're on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver.
years. Make it seem like it's been ages. And tomorrow saw new buildings, scrape the sky. I love this country dearly. I can feel the ladder clearly. But I never thought I'd be alone to try. Once I was outside Penn Station, selling red and white carnations. We were still alone, my wife and I. Before we met, we saved my money, brought my dear wife over. Now I want to bring my family stateside. Put off the boat, they stayed a while, then scattered across the coast. Once a year, I'll see them for a week or so at most. I should go up.
You gotta wait until I cook it. You gotta wait until I cook it. You gotta wait, wait, wait till I put it on your plate. You gotta wait until I cook it.
Calling all foodies, don't miss Eat Vancouver Food and Cooking Festival, taking place on Friday, May 24th, Saturday, May 25th, and Sunday, May 26th at BC Place Stadium, Vancouver, BC. For more festival details, visit eat-vancouver.com. Purchase your tickets online and save.
Couldn't stop my feet. For the past 7 years, Sled Island has delivered a hot, fresh, and saucy music and arts festival in Calgary, Alberta. In 2013, it's saucier than ever. From June 19th to 22nd, independent musical acts, visual artists, filmmakers, and comedians, including the CITR Showcase featuring White Lung, will frolic your amusement at over 30 venues. For more information on schedules, venues, ticket purchases, and more, visit www.sledisland.com. Sled Island is proudly sponsored by CITR.
Oh,
You're listening to Are You Aware? Music that has something to say on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver. And in that quadrupleness of wonderfulness, you heard Obijou. That was the last song with their song was called Niagara from their album Metal Meets. In the middle there, we had Swedish Likey Lee from her album of a couple of years ago, Jerome, and then Brastronauts finished off the set with Francisco and Mean Sun. Well, I'm very excited to have in the studio right now the two fantastic guests from Inner City Farms. Now, the urban farming revolution has been gaining momentum over the years, and innovative farmers reinvigorate urban areas, and that is exactly what Inner City Farms is doing. Right now I have co-founder and head farmer Camille Dumont and Will Valley, who is the co-founder of Inner City Farms. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks a lot for having us.
You're welcome. Now, can you tell the listeners what you do?
Well, yeah, sure. We basically grow as many vegetables as possible in Vancouver. We transform people's yards, front yards, backyards, into agricultural space and do so all around town, right in the city, and grow food.
Fantastic. And how did this come about? You said you'd been going for 4 years.
Mm-hmm. I'm a bit of an outsider to this particular group. It's a collection of Kitsilano High School graduates, grad 97, and I married into the group, and eventually we started talking about growing food, kind of over beers type thing, and
where great ideas start, right?
Yeah,
beers.
Over beers, that's almost all of our ideas start. So lamenting that we had no access to land really as 20 somethings in Vancouver, so we're renting, we're in apartments, and we really wanted to learn how to grow food for ourselves, mainly, just kind of feeling and wanting to be self-reliant. And having a bit of background in growing food and realizing also that when you grow some food, you grow a lot of food, usually. And so that's kind of the first step. It was like we wanted to grow food. We ended up growing a lot of food in small spaces. And then coming together, we just had too much food. So we thought, let's start doing this on a bigger scale.
And you, in your on your website, you talk about a community shared agricultural model. That's what you guys use. So can you explain that to the listeners that might not be familiar with that?
Sure. Basically, what we get people to do is invest in our farm in the springtime. Our costs as farmers are primarily kind of spring loaded, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so if you purchase a share in the farm, we're going to grow as much food as possible in the space that we have designated as our farm area. And then each week throughout our harvest season, you're going to get a basket of food that is grown in your city. And it's basically, that's the model. It's not a new model, per se. The thing's been around for 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of, I think, based in the concept of wanting to know the people that are producing your food and kind of an agreement between some sort of community that decides, okay, we want to know that our food is safe and healthy and good and that it's coming from a place we can trust. Mm-hmm. And they hire food producers to take care of the nitty-gritty, and that's kind of what we do. And it can be done with other types of food too. It doesn't have to be vegetables, but we just do the vegetable thing. So,
and then, so how many plots around the city do you actually have?
It's hard to say because every year there's a kind of a flux. Like first year we had maybe 15, and we lost a few. We gained a few kind of in transition. Over the years we've grown a bit, around 20 or so residential spaces. And then last year was our biggest loss. We lost 5 of some pretty nice yards that we got attached to, which we probably shouldn't have. And then, so now
we're taking on 9 new spaces this year.
Wow.
So we're just kind of at the end of building those. So I'd say we probably have in the neighborhood of about 20, but it's kind of like the number is a bit misleading in that some of them are pretty big, some of them are pretty small, and it's kind of some are front yard and backyard, just front yard. So, I'd say like roughly 20 to, 23 sites.
Okay, and then so walk me through the process. I'm a landowner that has a terrible landscape back garden that I just cringe every time I go out there and look at it. And I think, you know what? I don't want to grow lawn because that's just not good for the environment. It takes up way too much water. What can I do? I hear about inner city farms. How does that process work from someone calling you up? Do you come in and like scout out the land and plow the land and do all that? Or what's the kind of process?
Yes, basically exactly.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
I could be a farmer now.
you got it. Exactly. That. So people, all sorts of types of people, look us up or hear about us, and then they feel like being a part of, either they just really think it's a cool idea and they want to be a part of a sustainability project, or they just think local food is important, and they get in touch, and then we usually do a site visit, and we go meet them and talk about what they have in mind. And a lot of times people don't exactly know what kind of environment is necessary for food production. So, there's a lot of times we go and it turns out there's a giant spruce tree in someone's yard and it's just not going to happen. Other times it's a wonderful giant lawn that's, very well kept, but it's full sun and they just think, well, this is kind of not space that I use, so can you do something with it? If it's a go, we take it on and agree with them kind of the parameters. They get a little bit of they basically get a harvest share in exchange for the space that they donate to us, depending on how big the area is. So we get in there and we take whatever's there out and bring whatever we need in and build beautiful vegetable gardens and go for it. So. Mm-hmm.
And then do they maintain the vegetable gardens, or do you come in and check for insects and things like that?
No, we do everything. We don't mind having involvement by the landowner, but because we're kind of attached to the end product, we want a bit of control over what goes on in there. So we till it over, we bring in amendments, we plant, weed, harvest, tend everything, and so we like to incorporate some of our landowners in some of the processes as an educational experience and an opportunity to enjoy the garden. But really, if the landowner said, I don't want to do anything, perfect. That's great, fine by us too. So
and then do they get the produce that's actually grown out of their land, or is it sort of all encompassed together and then you divvy it out depending?
So we consider our farm the entire network of farms, and the land providers get food from all around Vancouver, not just their space. Mm-hmm. For example, we might do just a tomato garden in someone's yards if the conditions are perfect for just growing just something that's heat-loving and, you know, like tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you know, tomatoes are, they come due like at the end of the summer, and there's about 3 or 4 weeks of them. So if you had a tomato yard, you wouldn't get food until then. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and you'd only get tomatoes, which are delicious, mm-hmm. but
you get sick of them after a while.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So what we do is we consider the network our farm. And then we provide food from everyone else's yards to that land provider, that person that's given us the space. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, it's not just what's in your own yard.
Absolutely.
Certain yards really dictate what can be grown there. And so I think one of the benefits of our particular model is that we're not just asking landowners to go ahead and help yourself to what's grown in your space. Mm-hmm. We bring it all together and give them a variety. Some of our spaces just grow potatoes, in a sense, or they'll grow garlic for a season. And yeah, it would be really not an appealing model if we just offered zucchini to someone for 6 weeks. I don't think we'd have very much mm-hmm. returning land providers type thing.
Part of what we like to do too is we kind of set up our little weekly harvest pickup at a little cafe called Le Marché Saint-Georges in East Vancouver. And we get land providers to come too, and they kind of mix with the people who are buying into the program who aren't providing space. So it's kind of nice to have that connection between us, the people that are growing the food, the people who just are supporting our project because they think it's a good idea and they want the food, and then also the people who are coming at it from providing land, you know, from the perspective of someone who has the space and thinks that sharing that space with us is a good call. So it's kind of, from the social side of things, it's nice to kind of blend all those worlds together, you know.
So there is that option. If you don't have land, you can still buy into it and get those fresh veggies over the summer. And
that's like how we generate income for our project, for our company, is basically people that sign up and pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And how many people usually sign up for a season?
We are doing 50 shares this year, so 50 families. It's roughly enough food for a family, all the vegetables a family might need for a week.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably a bit much for someone by themselves. We also work with some chefs around town, a few of the kind of restaurants that really kind of feel that local sustainable is important in their...
Can we drop their names? Their names?
So we could certainly drop their names. We definitely have a really good relationship with Portland Craft at Main and 23rd. Mm-hmm. They have supported us for a couple years. We work with Matchstick Coffee. Also Gray's Food, which is a vegan restaurant that's just opening up near Fraser and King Edward, I think. We also have a relationship with Culver City Salads. They're one of the new one of the new food trucks that just was announced. So that's pretty cool. They're going to be doing some really cool stuff. And Smack? Am I forgetting? Yeah, Smack. That's right. Brendan's another grad 97 Kitsilano alumni. Healthy fast food, Smack downtown, which is opening any day, I'm assuming. So those guys are all, like, they've all really committed to investing in us and what we're doing, and they've kind of got, you know, they're willing to pay up front and support us in that way. And then we've also got other chefs that do catering and do stuff that is kind of more ad hoc and now and again, you know.
It just sounds like a fantastic community, all with the same passion and purpose to provide, you know, great food at a locally produced in an ethical and organic way, by the sounds of things.
There is a bit of tension, though, between our model of distribution, like how we get food to restaurants and to our individual families, compared to the regular model of food is available all the time, and you just have to go there. And so for the individual family, you just go to the grocery store, you get food, it's great, and you don't have to really think about your organization of your time. And same for restaurants, where they can say, I want this, this, and this for this week, and I'm going to design my menu, whereas we say, here's what's ready, mm-hmm. and it's going to all arrive on one day this week. There you go. So it's a bit of a stretch in the logistics of our ways of dealing with food on the restaurant, so the commercial level and also individual household level. And that's where we see it takes some adjustment to really receive a large volume of food from mm-hmm. us for a few months of the year. So it's a bit of that's for me, that's our biggest ask of the consumer, of the shareholder, is that, you're going to have to change your ways of dealing with food.
But it makes you more creative, right? And it's kind of what we had as our ancestors had, right? Like mm-hmm. we couldn't go into the supermarket and buy that avocado in December. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If it didn't grow, we don't eat it, right? Yeah, and I think that convenience, I think that's where things are dying out, kind of thing, that mm-hmm. convenience food model. Mm-hmm. People are realizing it's not sustainable and mm-hmm. it's not good for the environment.
Yeah. But it's very socially and emotionally appealing. So there's still that bridge there. Like we're in that transition period where we have an alternative. There's now an alternative to the supermarket, but we still have when you break up with someone, there's the carrot breakup where it's clean, and then there's the celery where it's kind of stringy. And this is a bit of a celery breakup with the food system. It's like, I really like getting avocados in December.
I will eat them all year long.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
just to add to that, though, the one X factor that we have is that if you eat seasonally properly, like if you're eating a tomato when a tomato is ripe in your, a proper heirloom tomato that you picked off the vine that day, it'll taste better than every tomato you've had the rest of the year.
Yeah. And so, it lasts longer as well. I hate going to the grocery store and you buy something on Saturday and it's rotten by Tuesday. Drives me crazy.
I mean, we're able to harvest the same day we provide our food to restaurants and to our family shareholders, which I think is pretty cool and hard to find. And there are other urban agriculture outfits and some, peri-urban local farms that can do that too. Mm-hmm. But as far as the overall consumption of vegetable products, it's pretty rare that you're getting something that morning was still in the ground,
Absolutely.
And that's a special thing. And I think the true foodie and the chefs that we deal with certainly recognize that, there's a real kind of excitement and value to that. So that's
it makes their job easier. It's like one chef described it as, I just have to get out of the way of the vegetables type thing. Like, the vegetables taste so good on their own that my job is to not mess that up, in mm-hmm. a sense. So it's nice.
And having that sort of natural flavor back that is just being modified on so many different levels when you get food from outside your local area as well. Mm. It brings me to a great point that I wanted to ask you guys about was, what does food sustainability mean to you guys?
Wow.
I know, I just thought I'd start awesome. With the easy ones awesome. And then like...
awesome.
That's a really... Food sustainability is it's a
I want a 10-minute thesis study.
Yeah, sure. We're both working on that thesis concept. Well. I think the sustainability thing is really complex, and I have a hard time with the amount of attention that we get for being sustainable, because I do agree that part of what we offer is a more sustainable option than much of the food available. I also I don't think sustainability is a thing per se. I think that there are kind of a bunch of branches to it, and food sustainability, there's no silver bullet solution to that kind of thing. I think being conscious of where your food comes from and being aware of the energy that is used to produce that food is important. I get bogged down in it, though. I think it's I still buy sprinklers to water my gardens that came here from a container ship and are made of plastic, and that's, and we're sustainable, so it's like, it's kind of messy,
Well, and I mean, that's the economic model nowadays, right? Like you can't help, you can try your hardest and hardest and hardest, but like you say, there's going to be products that will have that carbon footprint that really adds to that concept, mm-hmm. the sort of aloof concept of sustainability.
We kind of have been thinking about our activities and our actions as being more in line with health. If we consider it more of a healthy process in terms of the health of the food, so when you harvest something and then the hours after harvest, it's just the amount of the nutrients, the nutrient value of that food is decreasing based on when you last harvested it. So the health of our food is quite high in terms of nutrient value, but then the health of our systems ecologically and socially is also quite high. sustainable is just such a it's a trap, essentially. When we talk about sustainability, someone will ask us, you know, what do we mean by sustainability, and then pick it apart and say, oh, do you use, mm-hmm. like Camille said, do you use plastic sprinklers? Well, then you're not sustainable. So for us, it's a framing it in terms of health of ecological systems, health of the social systems, which is probably the biggest impact that we've seen is the amount of social capital or social growth that has come from our business and our process. And then, of course, the nutritional health of, if you buy our shares, if you eat the food that we provide for 4 months of the year, it forces you to shift the way you eat, and it forces you to cook more and hopefully compost. And so all these health processes come out of it, and health outcomes.
It's definitely a domino effect, right? Mm-hmm. And it gives people, like we chatted about earlier, with regards to, you know, that quick fix of going to the convenience store or whatever to get that cucumber or whatever you need for that salad, you're not thinking about where's this coming from. Whereas when you get it from you guys, you know the process, you've seen what's been happening in the agricultural areas that you're not in the urban agricultural areas that you're doing it, and you have that food. So it's that thought process of, okay, awareness raising, which really adds to a lot of sustainability efforts for everyone on an individual and a global level as well.
Yeah, my feeling on sustainability, I think, is that no one really knows what that looks like. I don't think, by the time I had even a rudimentary understanding of the sustainability concept, I had already been complicit in so much non-sustainable behavior just by participating in my Vancouver life. That then, okay, there's this, like, this ideal that, you know, is a wonderful idea and concept, and it's like, and I'm already guilty of being completely unsustainable as a person. So I think that, like, Will's comment on health is, I think, really important in that, like, trying to focus on things that are going to make your life better, your body feel better, your community stronger, your friendships more enriched, and having a good time, and doing so in a way that ecologically maybe makes more sense than the status quo, I think is pretty cool. And your comment about awareness raising, I think, is really valid. I think that mostly what we do at Inner City Farms is bring the conversation of food systems into people's neighborhoods
Dining
and into
table.
Their lives. And right to their and frankly, the relationship between people and their food is one of the most intimate relationships you can kind of, you know, get involved with. Mm-hmm. And I feel really privileged to be directly feeding people the food that we grow, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I think that's pretty special. And I think that it comes with an awareness, and that people, you know, the people that support us do so from a place of intention, and they care about our project and about us, and they do it, you know, for the reasons that are maybe a little bit less obvious, you know, like they want to feel good about what they eat, and when they eat the food we've grown, I think they do. So
it's those golden karma points.
Yeah.
Yeah. You should always feel good about what you eat. It seems like it's a strange thing to think of as being not an objective of what you're eating, is to not feel good about it. That should just be a given, although it hasn't been with our kind of dysfunctional relationship with food.
And especially with commercialization of agriculture and just all that. I mean, we could sit here for hours talking about this.
We just might.
But I wanted to, you guys, I had some homework for these guys over the last couple of days. So for people that haven't listened to Are You Aware before, when I get people in to be guests, I ask them to choose three songs that inspire them to be involved in social change, just as a way of, for me, this whole show is about awareness raising and integrating music and positive change. So tell me about your first song choice, and was it difficult to choose the three songs?
Yeah, well, there are actually five of us in Inner City Farms, five founding members, plus currently eight interns, and then we have some associates from the previous year, and Michael as well. So we have a large group, and the question was kind of put, what songs should we put out, at least the initial five, and it spilled over.
We're also bad at responding to each other's emails, so no one comments
or reflects
contributed.
On it.
Well, I'm
too
glad
much.
You got it in by the deadline. So
yeah, that's right. We're good with deadlines.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah. Well, so it was quite difficult. It was.
So when you say the first song, which one is the first?
It's the Beatles.
Song? Ah, yes, they're an up and coming group.
Yeah,
they're gonna be big. Well,
I'm gonna go to their concert soon.
Bring
me. I'd love to go.
The Beatles. This song in particular, The Revolution. Since I was a child, I loved. I don't know why. I think it was the distortion of this song. It was just different than any other Beatles song, but also the message behind it, like the. It's kind of a perspective of everyone wants a revolution, but you should at least know why you're proposing this sort of course of action, and also that twist in the song of it's best just to start with your own mind. And really that's what we think of Inner City Farms as, changing the landscape to impact the mindscape, to impact how you see food and how you see your relationship with the urban landscape and ecological processes. So it matches in that sense. We're really focusing on people's minds more so than their bodies, although they're connected. So yeah.
Also, some beetles eat aphids.
They totally do.
Which is awesome.
Which is absolutely awesome, and that helps you.
Predatory beetles in the garden are incredible.
Well, we're going to play this song right now, and then we're going to be back with William and Camille to talk a little bit more about food sustainability and inner city farms and all that is good about naturally and organically and locally grown food. You're on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver.
But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out?
Don't you know it's gonna be
alright? Alright. Alright. You say you got a real solution. Contribution, well, you know, we all do what we can. But if you want money for people with minds that hate, all I can tell you is, brother, you have to wait. All right.
From CITR 101.9 in Vancouver, and we are here with the Inner City Farmers. Do you like that title?
It's all right.
It'll work.
It'll work.
Oh, yeah.
Had you always wanted to be farmers?
No. Do we want to be farmers now?
Yeah, that's a good question. Now that we know how much work it is and how much low.
No, I don't think. I think it came right out of the blue. I did a lot of gardening, like horticultural landscaping, and worked for the Parks Board, City of Vancouver. Gardening stuff, and Will has an interest and has always had an interest since I've known him.
I had the exact opposite feeling towards farming, mainly based on misunderstandings, but what I used to work in conservation biology in the Okanagan, and I thought farms were the devil. I mean, I thought farming was what was ruining our natural ecosystems and our heritage, or our ecological heritage. And turns out through that process of working with farmers, I had a complete 180 and understood, oh, actually, it's a certain type of farming that has these negative consequences. And then there's actual farming processes and practices that enhance our ecological biodiversity and also provide services for humans. So it's, yeah, so I remember distinctly, probably when I was about 20, thinking farming was evil.
And then so the epiphany happened.
I think it was a slow process, maybe a retrospective epiphany. Okay. But yeah, it definitely happened at one point.
Nice. Now, when we were talking while the Beatles were playing that really unknown song, I thought I'd get into the difficult issues right now. So the first question I have, and we've sort of talked about this a little bit, like living in urban areas, how detached are we from our food sources? I mean, we've been talking about, you know, the awareness and things like that. As people that are really attached to their food sources, because this is what you do, what do you see around Vancouver with regards to that detachment?
Okay, Vancouver is actually a pretty good city for being still having, we have the land base essentially, so we have the yard space and we have a bit of leisure time and enough interest to still grow a lot of food. The old statistics have been thrown around, I think from the 90s, maybe the early 2000s, was about 44% of Vancouverites still grow food on their property in some sense. I don't know if that includes people who grow food on their balconies, so it might even be a bit higher.
I have kale on my balcony.
Yeah, so that would count. And so I think Vancouver in general isn't that bad. Overall, it's so hard to make sweeping statements about urbanism. In other parts of the world, like I used to live in Korea, and I used to see people growing beans on the side of streets that were, you know, never even thought that people would grow food or even walk on. It was just such, you know, underused land. And yeah, so the people have been growing food in cities forever. It's just this kind of small blip in human history where we've just had the, I don't know, the privilege, I don't know if that's the right word, but in a sense, the ability not to think about food and growing it. It's been separate. So I think Vancouver does all okay. Yeah, definitely room for improvement. I don't know, Cam, you want to pick up on this? I'm trailing off a little.
Well, there's a lot, I think there's a lot of energy for it now. You know, there's a lot of talk about food in the media. There's a lot of people that are interested starting gardens, and a lot of groups, I think of Victory Gardens, like groups that are actively engaging people to grow their own food. What's surprising to me is how disconnected we are from that process. And that's, I speak of myself, like I didn't know anything about growing food when I started doing this. And that's, I guess, the one thing is that like there's this energy and this wave of interest where people are really curious and are trying things and they're willing to seek out help. And I think that that's, I'm hoping that that is an actual shift in the way we are interacting with our foods, as opposed to just a fad that will then fade away. Mm-hmm. I believe that it is. I think there's two things you learn from growing your own food. One is how difficult it is to make your food happen, how much time and energy it takes to bring one meal to your plate. And the other is how rewarding it is, and it's how awesome it is to feed your friends something that you grew yourself and talk about it and eat it. And, you know, and I think people are living those things, and I think those realities are really important. And when you go to the supermarket, if you have a concept of, you know, that kale plant on your balcony, and then you see the bunch of kale in the supermarket, you can say, well, that's an entire kale plant right there, you know. So, yeah, so I think that, you know, I live here and I know Vancouver. I don't, you know, I can't speak for other places, but I think the energy for food production and for people's gardens is kind of on an upswing, and I think that that's really inspiring. And I also think that there are lots and lots and lots of Vancouverites who have been growing food forever and ever. And I think of neighborhoods near Commercial Drive or in Southeast Vancouver, and there's just like backyard gardens all over the place. And that's a little bit off the grid. It's not part of the narrative necessarily of a food revolution or a local food movement. It's just people who understand that they have space and they have seeds and they have knowledge and they're going to make their food themselves. You know?
Do you think that I don't know how supportive the city of Vancouver is for you guys. I assume that they are pretty good. Do you think that there's ever going to be a time, hopefully closer in the future, where there's going to be those community food gardens in where there's parks right now? I mean, we have all these beautiful parks where there could be an acre left for this food growing. Can you see that happening in the future?
It's tough because I really like parks. Yeah. I really like the ability to go enjoy and play in a park. So it serves a great purpose.
I'm just saying, take a little bit of that.
Sure. Yeah, no, but you've stumbled on a really interesting issue because there is a lot of a push by the food growing community to maybe use parkland. And there is underutilized parkland. I think that from an inner city farms perspective, we see the social services and benefits that parks have. And I think we should have new food growing areas, frankly. And I think we should identify places that are being underused that could be used to grow food or perhaps to make a new park and go in that direction. And so neither I think Will or I are advocates of using parkland in the city to grow food. I do think that the city of Vancouver is behind what we're doing, you know, quite significantly. I'm very happy with the support we've had.
Yeah. According to their policy and their laws, we're illegal, but they're not prosecuting, intentionally not coming after us. And
you're
at the same time,
what?
Well, because of the zoning issues about you know, residential space and commercial, it's something new that's been thrown at the city. And as a city, you have to react based on what you have in writing. And if what you have in writing doesn't match reality, there's two ways you can enact on it, or you can change the writing. So they're in the process of changing the writing, which is pretty amazing, in consultation with urban farmers, other community groups who are interested in supporting urban agriculture. So the city of Vancouver has been doing an amazing job.
That's super encouraging.
It is encouraging. It's great. It's nice to hear that that's not only from the bottom up, but from the top down too. So.
Yeah, there are other cities in North America that are doing the opposite. People are growing vegetables on the front yard, and they're being fined. Which is
Orlando's the big one, right? Yeah. Where if you grow food outside your house in Orlando, you're probably gonna be in
your front
trouble.
Yard, because it's an eyesore. And
How is a tomato plant an eyesore?
Well, different people see the world
differently. I know.
Are you aware?
I'm aware. Yeah. They're just wrong and silly.
Other people are wrong.
Yeah. But it would be completely justifiable for the city of Vancouver to say we can't operate under the current policies and legislation, the municipal laws.
And it's not there's concerns that are valid. Like there are, if you are growing a crazy vegetable garden and you're not being conscientious and safe and you're not doing the work that you have to do to make sure that it does look, okay and that people aren't offended and that there's not whatever can come along with that. It comes from a place of validity. It's nice that the city understands that the evolution towards, self-sustaining food production is also important,
And you're doing a positive thing for the community, so you shouldn't be chastised for that as well, right? There's all different urban farming models out there, and there's urban farms that have used reclaimed land and are using raised flower beds and things like that. Do you have an opinion on that, where it should be either in the ground or not, or is it just you're happy that it's just any kind of space is being utilized that might have been left idle for a long time?
The site really tells the person what can be grown there. And so if it's an industrial site with a bit of a shady history, and maybe there's heavy metals or certain chemicals in the ground that need to be taken out somehow, and definitely not through growing a plant to eat, then that has to be grown above ground, importing soil, and that's fine too. At this stage, it's whoever is interested in growing food in the city and being participating in that process and raising awareness as a secondary kind of option or secondary goal of benefit. Yeah, benefit. That's great. As long as hopefully they understand the basics of growing food and soils and all that, so that they do it in a safe manner. Yeah, that's fine.
Great. Yeah. Now, there's been, especially over the last sort of month and a half, Monsanto has come on the sort of global stage for not very good reasons. Can you tell the listeners that don't know about it, who is Monsanto, what do they do, and what are their plans to essentially copyright plants, so to speak?
Yeah, Monsanto, they've been around for a while. They've been a number of different, and I'm not an expert on Monsanto, but I also don't feel bad about misrepresenting Monsanto. having said that, Monsanto has been other different companies, and they're a corporation. They're a corporation that has shareholders, and they're accountable to making profit for their shareholders. The particular business is agricultural products, so seeds, fertilizers, and the sort intellectual property rights, because they don't make enough money. So they invest a lot in the technology to genetically engineer certain seed lines, which is fair. I mean, we've been genetically impacting plants and animals for a long time. That's kind of what we do as humans. And so they've just kind of taken to another level. And then currently, within our legal framework, we have honored intellectual property rights, and then they've taken that bit of thought and applied it to what they're doing to say that, you know, if we find evidence that you have our genetic material on your property and you haven't paid us, then we'll sue you to compensate us for our hard-earned efforts. And then they also make so much money that they can actually employ people to go and monitor. And so when you're monitoring things like genes floating through the air, through pollen, you're going to find it everywhere. And then you're going to be able to prosecute a lot more people and then make a lot more money and keep other people in line and all this. It's just a different mind frame to so many aspects of humanity. It's incredible.
Well, and I think the huge uproar right now is that scary concept of patenting seeds. Yeah. Seeds that are, you know, natural, our sort of God-given right as people of the living in this earth. And so it just astounds me that they're allowed to get away with this, and they're sort of finding these great little loopholes in European law.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because you wouldn't want to take an artist's property or like a book or a movie or whatever, and we all understand property rights, intellectual property rights on a certain scale. When it's applied to seeds, it's harder for us to really understand as humanity. But they are actually doing something that's unique and that they've invested in, and under our current way of seeing efforts and investments, they fall with under legal protection to charge and prosecute and all that stuff.
Did you just speak for humanity?
I think so. So
wow.
Don't worry, I do it all the time.
Seeds and humanity, they kind of go hand in hand. So
but also, sorry, I'm less of an expert than Will on anything Monsanto.
I'm not an expert.
My understanding is that they can't patent seeds that exist independently of them, right?
Yeah, they have to.
So I think for me, like, I actually have done some reading about it, and I have some information, and I find it really confusing, and I don't always know. I certainly feel like the argument gets boiled down to something that's simple, when actually it's not, you know, and that bothers me to no end in every realm. Mm-hmm. But also, it is also really scary. I mean, we're talking about it's our food source. It's our, you know, so yeah, I think it's above me and beyond me, but I also do have concern and.
Yeah. But our practices and our actions speak to a solution for it, in the sense that we, pretty sure we don't get any seeds from Monsanto, although with the global seed trade, it's being more and more concentrated.
How do you even know,
If you buy certified organic seeds, they're not from Monsanto. Pretty sure Monsanto doesn't have a certified organic line of seeds. Yet. And if they did, would that be a bad thing? That's where it comes in kind of tricky, because say Monsanto did convert to providing more organic seeds based on our organic certification standards, and they distributed more organic seeds.
Rabbit hole.
Yeah, rabbit hole. But so even if Monsanto wasn't organics, is that an evil thing? Or does that mean organics has really gotten washed out to something that Monsanto can get behind? So I don't think they have an organic seed line of Monsanto in Monsanto. And then we primarily buy organic seed lines. So that's how we get around the we don't think we support Monsanto. But the whole seed industry is also a... not just Monsanto, but the consolidation in one or two companies is quite interesting.
I think, like, it comes down to, again, the onus is always put on the consumer, which is, you know, there's a ream of problems with that. But basically, you have to know, you know, and if you're willing to ask the right questions, and there's a whole part of that whole argument in industry that is dedicated to deceiving the consumer as well. Like there are things, you know, like just the whole labeling stuff and all that, you know, it's like, it's hard to get that information, but there are people that are working very, very hard to provide it. And if you can source out those people, I think you can probably do your best to be as safe as possible if that is your choice, you know. It's also not the choice of the majority, you know, the amount of big agricultural business that is doing deals with Monsanto or companies that are like Monsanto is the majority of them, you know, and that's something we have to face too, is that, you know, we can be talking about all these things and really passionate about them and they're really important, and also the train is moving in a direction already, you know, and that's important to be aware of as well.
Do you feel a little bit like David and Goliath sometimes? just putting it in there.
Yeah, sure. What the heck?
No, because I think Goliath was aware of David, and we're not even at that stage.
Yeah, right.
And urban agriculture in Vancouver isn't growing enough food to really even compete. Like, it would be misleading, and it would be dishonest of us to say that we're actually having an impact on the amount of food being grown and consumed in Vancouver. But that's really, again, back to Camille said this earlier, that's not the point of inner city farms. It's nice for us because we rely on people purchasing our food to make our business grow and survive, but it's really about the raising the social awareness of food in general, food citizenship. Like, if you're surprised that people are growing food in Vancouver, why are you surprised? Like, why is that such an anomaly for you and all that? So in that sense, we're kind of in the PR business against what some of the bigger corporations might have, but in terms of the actual production of food, we're not in the same. I wouldn't even say we're in the same. I can't say we're in the same realm. We're not even. It's just. It's insignificant. So it's really the awareness and that where it can go towards. So people hear about us or maybe participate in our programs, and then it hopefully trickles down to. This is a bit of an economist theory of a trickling down effect, which is sad. So we're hoping that it impacts the way they see the rest of the food system. And they make choices based on that. But it's really not about food production.
Absolutely. Yeah. What does the future hold for inner city farms?
That's a great question. And
patent seeds.
Yeah. Yes. If we can only figure out a way to patent everything, we'll be just fine. The future is wide open, and our oyster. We have grown every year that we've been in business.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we are... I mean, the ideal and sort of utopic future would be to picture where you see grass lawns now in Vancouver that aren't being used or enjoyed by the people who own that space turned into food production space, you know. And whether that's through inner city farms or through other groups or whatever, I think the ideal for me is to really connect this to more and more people each year and to have it become normal and to have it become just a way of life. And even beyond what I think Will was saying in regards to connecting, you know, our efforts and our energy to people's relationship to the food system, I strongly believe that ecologically we're at a place now that is very tenuous and frightening. And I think that the relationship between someone and their food speaks to the relationship between them and the planet in general. And I think that through this kind of stuff, you kind of just get a pass to talk about that kind of topic, you know?
Well, and we hope that we're not going along that same path of the old model that is dysfunctional, right?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. I mean, it's, you know, it's very, very simple what we're doing. And it's something that people have been doing ever since they thought about, oh, like, maybe I should save this seed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we're breaking too many rules, and I don't think that we're coming up with anything particularly innovative. All we're doing is putting energy and effort into something we like and believe in, and we're having a good time doing it, and people are eating well as a result. But the conversations that spin out are super positive, and people are inspired, you know, and they're happy. We make, you know, we have people that stop by our yards, and our gardens are very visible, and they chat to us, and they everyone has a connection to farming. Everyone has a connection to a garden, you know, and they get to relive that through us a bit. And
mm-hmm.
I think it feeds them in more ways than just nutritionally, you know.
And what you said, it really, I mean, I am nowhere like you guys. I literally have a couple of herbs on I live in an apartment, right, on my on my windowsill. But what you said, like, I have noticed just in the last year and a half of me growing it, the reward you get from being able to grow something that you saw from a little tiny thing into this great food source is amazing. And coming from, I mean, I used to have to weed the garden as punishment. So I've come a long way from that, where I didn't like gardening, to now do this. And I think that, like you say, what you guys are doing with Inner City Farms is providing that awareness, that reward, that instant reward that, is, like you say, has been detached for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So we're running out of time, and I have two more songs that I want to do, and I know that I've actually... I promised you that you'd be home by now. But tell everyone before you go, there's two more questions. First question, how do people get involved and things like that? Tell them, give us the website, give us what you want people to do.
Innercityfarms.com is our website. That's pretty straightforward. We're on the Facebook and the Twitter.
And the Twitter. And the Instagram.
We should learn that.
Yeah.
I think it's easy. I heard it's not hard. No, we're not on that yet, but maybe later.
Mm-hmm.
Search us on there.
But yeah, so basically through social media, through our website is the best way to get us. You'll just, there's an email address, and then that comes to us, and then we will respond when we can as soon as possible.
So in other words, just be patient with them.
Yeah, we're not too bad.
No, we're good. I think, well, we're pretty good.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
But yeah, so basically just, yeah, through the website is the best way to get us. And
are you still looking for land, or you've got your land for the summer?
We're always looking for land. We're not looking for land for this season, mm-hmm. But this is a great time to introduce yourself if you have land for us and for us to start the conversation. It's actually pretty involved before we take on a space because there's all sorts of dynamics and relationships that come into play. Mm-hmm. But we're always looking for land. If you know someone that has a soccer field-sized turf that they just...
In Vancouver, you're dreaming.
Well, you know, they're out there.
There's a lot of property.
Yeah, and parts of the city. You know what's terrible? Mowing the grass. So,
paying someone to mow
Chafer
the grass.
Beetle has been ruining the lawns, which is good for us. Anyhow, certainly if you have space, get in touch. We still have a few memberships left for our CSA program, just a handful. Mm-hmm. But if you want vegetables every week this year from June to October.
And how much is it for June?
We charge $600, and it's about 18 to 20
weeks. 18 to 20 weeks, weather dependent.
And it feeds a family of four.
Two to four big eaters, you know, and obviously depending on how the season goes is that's how many vegetables you get. So it's a bit of a different model in that, you know, if it's going to be good weather and we're going to do good work, then you're going to get really a lot of food. Mm-hmm. And if there are locusts, well, there are locusts.
If there's snows in July, that could happen.
Yeah, this climate's changing, I heard. So.
Yeah, something about climate change. Yeah, I don't know.
It feeds a family of four, but it really impacts your vegetable consumption in a positive way. It's a lot of vegetables for a family of four, and a lot of different vegetables that you might not buy in the grocery store, mainly because they look like crap in the grocery store, like kale, limp-ass kale in the grocery store is pretty unappealing.
It's pretty unappetizing.
But when you get some very...
back that up.
Yeah, go for it. When you get some very nice kale from Inner City Farms, it's appetizing and you want to cook with it. And then when you get it every week, then you start to get creative with kale and how you get it
and
incorporated.
Do they get the same veggies each week, or is it mixed up?
It's mixed.
So it's
some
like
standards.
A surprise every week.
It is. It's like Halloween or Christmas. It's like Christmas.
Yeah.
Every week.
It's an analogy of some sort. We grow really beautiful vegetables. They're delicious, and we eat really well all summer. And at the end of our CSA season, it's remarkable how many people tell us that their health is better and they feel great. And they've, you know, so.
Well, your skins are just, your complexions are glowing. So I can already see the evidence.
We funnel all of our. All the money we make from the vegetables into skincare products.
Right. So that's the sideline. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, quickly tell me the last, because I think we're literally going to close with your last two songs
of
the day.
Excellent.
So tell the listeners about your last two songs. And I was very impressed with them, by the way.
Oh, good. So Dead Prez. So I'm a white middle-class male who really liked hip-hop when I was in Wu-Tang and all that sorts when I was growing up in a small town in BC. Dead Prez, it's an interesting model, interesting connection, because they, I don't think, at this time in their career, they were very much interested in reaching out to the white male Canadian population. However, this song is amazing.
Spoke to you.
Yeah, it's called Healthy Eating. Be healthy, yeah. And it, you know, it says, it starts with lentil soup is mental fruit.
Yep,
and,
I love this song.
Ginger root is good for the youth. I mean, it's perfect. And at the same time, it has an amazing beat. The lyrics, it's quick and punchy, and it's always been a song that stuck out in my mind of like, they really get it. They get the idea of, and they're promoting this in a medium that doesn't often talk about being healthy.
Absolutely.
And eating vegetarian. So it's an interesting song. Then Cam's was the next pick.
Yeah, it's a song called Light a Candle, and it's by Neil Young, and it's I think it's 2009, so it's not too old. And Neil Young's one of my favorite artists, and I think that this song in particular speaks to not having a bleak outlook toward the future. I think that there's a lot of doomsday talk and a lot of frightening stuff, and at the same time we have to live our lives and enjoy ourselves and have some sort of satisfaction by what we do. I also really like the intentional simplicity of this song. I feel like it's something to do basic, simple things right and to just reap the rewards of that. So that's why I chose that song.
And my final question is, if you had one message to give the world, what would it be?
Wow.
One message to give the world. Or if you start on this one.
One message to give the world. I would say eat more collard greens.
Yeah.
Because they are super delicious. And they're good for you. And They have a rich heritage culturally, and also they're very nutritious. So that would be, they're like a cabbage that doesn't form a head, frankly. Mm-hmm. And I think the world should know.
They are delicious. I'm going to take it from Dead Pred and say that the ginger root is good for the youth.
It's true. Word.
Yeah.
Word, Will.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, guys. It's been really, really great having you in. And don't forget, if you're interested in learning more about inner city farms, or maybe you have some fantastic land that just is aching to be toiled and veggies growing on it, please go to innercityfarms.com, and they're really nice guys, and they'll do some fun stuff with you guys. So right now we're going to have Be Healthy by Dead Prez. You're on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver.
All love, all love, all love. I don't eat no meat, no dairy, no sweets, only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school, my household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel, barbecue tofu, no fish though, no candy bars, no cigarettes, only ganja, fresh squeezed juice from oranges. Exercising daily to stay healthy, and I rarely drink water out the tap cause it's filthy.
Lentil soup is mental fruit, and ginger root is good for the youth. Fresh vegetable with them Itai stew, sweet yam fries with the green callaloo. Careful how you season and prepare your foods, cause you don't wanna lose vitamins and minerals, and that's the jewel. Life brings life, it's valuable, so I eat what comes from the ground, it's natural. Let your food be your medicine, no accelerant, strictly herb generates from the sun, cause I got melanin and drink water. Eight glasses a day, cause that's what they say.
They say you are what you eat, so I strive to eat healthy. My goal in life is not to be rich or wealthy, cause true wealth comes from good health and wise ways. We got to start taking better care of ourselves. They say you are what you eat, so I strive to eat healthy. My goal in life is not to be rich or wealthy, cause true wealth comes from good health and wise ways. We got to start taking better care of ourselves. Be healthy, y'all.
Yeah, hold the fuck up, yo. Take this little intermission. Listen what the fuck we got to say, you know? World is born, son. Niggas been living.
Instead of cursing the darkness, light a candle for where we're going. There's something ahead worth looking for. When the light of time is on us, we will see our moment come, and the living soul inside will carry on. It's a chance to give new meaning to every move we make, through the caverns and the caves where we come from. The light of dawn is on us, we will see what we can be, and the ancient ones can sleep an easy sleep. In the hallways of the ages, on the road to history, what we do now will always be with us. It's a chance to give new meaning to every move we make, in the caverns and the caves where we come from. Instead of curse.
mirrors in the darkness. Light a candle for where we're going. There's something ahead worth looking for. When the light of time is on us, we will see our moment come, and the living soul inside will carry on. Light a candle in the darkness so others might see ahead. Light a candle in the darkness when you go.
You're listening to Are You Aware? Music that has something to say on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver. And I want to say a huge thank you to both William and Camille for coming in and telling us all about Inner City Farms. What a fantastic initiative. And those guys are super cool. So like I said, if you have land or you want to get some locally fresh organic seeded vegetables, go to Inner City Farms and find out more, and you know, really support people that are doing some great work in and around Vancouver. One last thing before I go, before Darren gets in onto the airwaves, I just want to tell you about something that's happening at a furniture store down in Gastown. Style Garage in Gastown is putting on an event to raise money for Big Sisters on Thursday, May 30th. It's called Be More Authentically You. It's a style kind of tips and fusion night to support Big Sisters. You can go to Style Garage to find more, and tickets are on sale, and you'll get some wine, some great nibblies, and some fantastic style tips about how you can use your best assets. Well, I'm going to leave you with Zeus with their cover of a Genesis song, That's All. I will see you in 2 weeks, and hopefully by then it'll be delicious and summery. Thanks for joining me, and see you in 2 weeks. Be nice to one another.
do you enjoy these sounds? CITR is the home of amazing sounds. So listen to me always. 101.9, CITR.ca. Yeah.